So it became a dance of like, okay, it's still happening at her work.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Jules is the quote-unquote love interest because it's not really a love interest, and that's what I'm playing with, right? The cinematic language we've all been taught is that, oh, boy sees girl,
yeah.
Love story.
Of course.
But, you know, I'm fucking with the audience. And so you still have it take place at work. Now I'm going to be much more on the nose about it. Jules is a barista, so now it's like a direct servitude job,
right?
He is the customer coming in to buy coffees, and mm-hmm. she's the one making coffees, right?
Yeah.
And so now there's two things here now that the audience is like, oh, if any woman has been in a barista,
yeah, any kind of service job, yeah.
They're like, nah, yeah. Okay, great. Now I'm going to crank up the age difference. Now he's almost 40 and she's barely 25. Now everyone's like, if he asks her out, it's not just inappropriate.
Yeah.
It's disgusting and creepy and perverted.
Mm.
Great. And then I never have him ask her out.
Right.
In fact, I do the exact opposite. She invites him to something.
Oh.
And people are like, wait, that can't happen. I was literally told that can't happen. And I'm like, well, why can't it happen? Why can't it happen? They're like, because that's just like, what are you saying? What are you doing? And I'm like, well, what I'm saying is that at this very moment in the story, she has no idea what kind of a creep he is.
Yeah.
And you do. And you're casting judgment on this guy that you're seeing suffering PTSD,
mm-hmm.
who's going through these mental struggles, who's going through all this stuff. You can see him like getting pushed down this. And you are going, I don't want him, who's searching for human connection, to have this human connection.
Yeah, because this human connection makes me feel uncomfortable.
It makes me feel uncomfortable right. that she doesn't seem to be threatened by this guy at this point in the story when I know that she should be.
Yeah.
And I'm now rooting against this thing.
Yeah.
This thing that might actually
be something that can pull him to a healthy center.
To stop him
yeah.
from doing this.
Yeah.
Right? You're
yeah.
rooting against him having that human connection because you believe he's trying to get into her pants.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, you know, the exact opposite. You know, like I went to lengths to sort of be like, no. There is nothing happening here. This is just a person who meets someone and realizes, well, that's just, you know, like, I like talking to you. I like, you know, like, we have good communication. This is the thing that I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And then a whole bunch of other people go, you're a monster and you're a creep. And he's like, what? You know? And it pushes him down that path. And so it becomes this again, putting screws to the audience to sort of go, like, how far can I push your discomfort to really challenge your compassion, you know? Like, you might say that you're a compassionate person who, you know, wants acceptance and inclusivity and diversity, and I love all people. It's mm-hmm. like, okay, can you love this person, though?
Yeah.
Can you show compassion for this person? Or are you going to be the I hope you get help mm-hmm. and walk away person?
Right.
Because if someone is literally drowning and you say, I hope you get help, you're kind of an idiot and an asshole. But if someone is like mentally drowning, all we really do say, and those people on the left, they were like, I'm compassionate, I'm woke, I'm all about, I hope you get help.
Yeah.
You know, like we expect other people to do the work. And again, like it's a new topic, the mental health. Like we're still trying to like figure it out. And I know there's an uncertainty, right? There's not necessarily an immediacy to it, like someone physically drowning. But
yeah, well,
but that's sort of the thing that I wanted to start toying with is like, I want to show you how hurt and broken this person is. And I want you to be unwoke and how you feel about it, and then realize, oh God, that was really difficult for me to deal with, because a lot of my criticism about woke culture is that there's absolutely nothing wrong with woke culture. Like anyone who wants inclusivity and acceptance and diversity and embrace diversity and all the things that make us different, if you don't want that, you're kind of an asshole and I don't want anything to do with you.
Yeah.
But if you're the type of person who says that they're woke, accept.
It's
you're
kind
not
of the
really like, you know, like the challenge is love thy enemy, not love thy friend. Any asshat can love thy friend.
Yeah, exactly. It's finding the common ground with people that you don't agree with that you can find a way to make a connection.
Exactly.
It's that whole kind of NIMBY mentality, right? Like the people that are like, oh, you know, this drug epidemic is terrible. You know, it's a whole outrage. People, it's a mental health crisis. You know, people that need addiction. That's how we get all the homeless off the street. You're like, okay, great. Well, let's do low barrier housing. Let's do, you know, safe injection sites. And they're like, oh no, but not in my backyard. Like I want people to find, I want them to have help, but not here. No, yeah, never
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
Right. It's the kind of the armchair liberal idea of like, you know, in theory, I want to have compassion for everyone. But as soon as it's something that you have to makes you feel uncomfortable, have to you face really the reality or deal with anything that you don't necessarily agree with or even just want to see or touch because it makes you feel icky, then suddenly your morals really kind of falter. And you see it on both sides really simply.
It's much easier to say you're woke than to actually be woke, you know? And it might get us canceled right here, but one of the most woke individuals I would say is Bill Maher. Joe Rogan, because they will actually engage people who are completely opposite of them. They will have that. They'll at least make that effort. You know, they're not the type of person who would just say like, I have nothing to say to you. I have no, like, I just, you know, like there's at least that attempt.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't watched Bill Maher in quite a while.
Oh, yeah.
so I can't speak to his current thing. Joe Rogan, I've used to follow and gone back and forth. The thing that I have against Rogan, as I agree with your point, is that Rogan, the thing I'll give him credit on is that he will sit down and talk with anyone exactly the same, no matter their political leanings or their beliefs, their ideologies, whatever they happen to be pushing, because a lot of it is like any person that's rich is product placement and pushing a narrative. He'll talk to you as a human being at the same level and not talk down to you, which I appreciate. The problem I have with Rogan is that he's not necessarily the most educated of all guys.
Oh, yeah.
So he'll bring people on, and it seems to happen a bit more in recent years than how he used to be, is that he'll bring people on that, Joe might not have a specific agenda besides get people on my show so I can make money, so I can be rich. Is that he'll have people on that have a very specific agenda, whether it be a left agenda or more recently a right-leaning agenda, who have a very direct narrative that they're coming on the show to push to a very wide audience, and Joe doesn't always have the political knowledge or information to push back on some of these ideas that they're floating.
Yeah.
So it can make for a one-sided argument sometime.
Yeah.
But the fact that he'll have the conversation with the person is important, because if you just naturally shoot everyone down because you don't agree with them, that's not how you ever make change, right?
Exactly. And that's I'm glad you articulated it that way, because that is the nuance of why I appreciate Joe Rogan.
Mm.
If it's just him and his friends yakking, I literally would rather bang my head against the wall. Like, they're a bunch of douchebags. Let's just be blunt, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like, they're just a bunch of, you know, dumbasses. But, you know, he's got Oliver Stone on. He'll have, like, Neil deGrasse Tyson on.
Yeah.
He'll have, like, all of these interesting people.
Yeah, he'll genuinely talk to anyone. And that's an important thing.
And that's the important thing.
I think that there's a part of it that I go back to. I forget who the guy's name is off the top of my head. But there is, I think he was a black preacher, if I'm not mistaken. Anyways, he was a black activist who became friends with the leader of the Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan.
Mm.
And they went to meet him every day and had lunch till eventually, couldn't be more, you know, completely opposing point of view of people. But he met with them, he sat down with them, he talked to them every day, and eventually through having civil conversation with someone who vehemently hates you with every fiber of their being, everything that they stand for is believing that you shouldn't exist or that you're lesser than. By talking with that man every day, he eventually got the Grand Wizard to hang up his cloak and renounce everything that he did with the KKK.
Yeah.
Because having conversation and meeting people where they're at and having open dialogue, even if the person vehemently is against you or thinks you shouldn't exist, that's how you make change. That's how you find common ground and move forward in this world.
Totally.
As opposed to just shooting everyone down.
Exactly. You know, and I'm also guilty of sort of jumping to conclusions.
Oh, it's easy.
You know? I mean, like when I was in elementary school, you know, back in the day in the 90s, you know, if you were losing an argument, you would just tell someone, don't be such a Nazi about it. And everyone go, oh, like you just made a point that it was valid, you know? But no, you're absolutely right. It's about having those communications, and I'll never forget watching. It was during the pandemic. Again, I was just watching a bunch of YouTube, and so I ended up watching a bunch of Joe Rogan clips, and one of them was a conversation he was having with Jon Stewart, another great guest, and I ended up watching the whole thing. But it was the weirdest debate because you saw two people who loved and respected each other. One talking about why hunting was good, and the other who was like a sanctuary, farm animal, sanctuary owner, who's talking about saving animals from pain and misery. And the back and forth was respectful and articulate and so weird that nobody was yelling and screaming at each other. And I had to take a second and go, why does this feel weird? This is just a conversation.
Well, that's how conversation should be, but that's not what we get fed every day.
It's not what we get fed. And so that idea of like how the media and the content that we take in can sort of really spiral us, and here I am talking about Joe Rogan and Bill Maher, and I have to, I feel like now I have to say, like, during all of this as well, I realized, oh, I'm watching a lot of late night Bill Maher, Joe Rogan, a lot of comedians. That's the only way I could take in media content.
Almost most of my news has to come through a comedic lens.
Yeah, exactly. And then I realized, oh, I'm not getting a female perspective, and so I actually started subscribing to The View and watching The View to get like a whole now five female perspectives on what was happening in America as part of my consumption, while all of this research that I was doing that all sort of led to this moment, which is kind of like, oh, well, that's fortuitous, write what you know. So just having all those perspectives was really, really helpful, so it's not just like this one echo chamber, which I feel is happening on the left and on the right.
I agree. If you're interested in finding a way to get cut through the noise a little bit, if you haven't checked out the news outlet, I believe it's, if I'm not mistaken, it's called Ground, or it could be ground.org or ground.com, but it aggregates everything. It aggregates news from across the political spectrum.
Oh, cool, nice.
And basically, it will show you this, it's covering the same story, be like, hey, here's, Fox's take on it, here's CNN's, here's the other thing. So it can show you how the narrative is being spun through each kind of political lens.
Yeah.
It'll tell you how much of it, if there's false information in it, how much of it, which way the bias is leaning. So you can at least see. It kind of helps cut through the bias filter of what's being fed to you, so you can at least form better opinions in the news that you're trying to consume.
That's amazing. Like, just to see the side by side, it's like if anyone's had, two friends who've had a disagreement and they both tell you their side of the story.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, I know what really happened because there's overlap, and I know your personality, so I know this is exaggerated. I know your personality. I know this is exaggerated. But they'll spin it into their own favor.
Well, everyone does. Everyone's the hero in their own story.
Exactly.
Right?
Fantastic. Writing 101 right there.
All right, let's cut into a bit more music. Right, again, if you guys are just tuning in, you're listening to CGSF 90.1 FM. I've been chatting with Nadav Sasha Santos, an indie filmmaker from Vancouver, who's got an Indiegogo going on for his new film, Cabbie. That's C-A-B-B-I. I suggest you go to Indiegogo.com if you like our conversation and what you're talking about. Go check it out. If you got the financial means, support me if you can, or share it, talk about it, let people know that the film's happening. We'll be right back.
Does anyone know how loaded he was when he unloaded his gun? Does anyone know how loaded he was when the slaughter had begun? Described the and there's no enemy to blame. It doesn't matter how many were killed, the debate is the same. Is it all right to hunt or just shoot for fun? Is the protection we need from the gun? The blame is always placed on someone. It's always how the story is spun. Only a lunatic would sell a lunatic a gun.
Yes, 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 you're tuning in to CJSF 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Johnny Bones, and you're listening to Rad Radio. I've been hanging out for the past, 50 minutes or so with Nadav Sasha Santo, an indie filmmaker here in Vancouver who is currently doing a Indiegogo campaign for his new film called Cabbie, that's C-A-B-B-I, a bit of a modern retelling, an updated version of Taxi Driver, and a satire of the themes there found within. Before I get back to chatting with Navi, I would be doing... Sorry. Nadav.
Hey, look, I've got so many nicknames. Navi, I think, might be the first time I've ever heard that one, but I like it. Let's go with Navi.
Before I get back to chatting with Nadav about his new film, I would be remiss if I didn't let you guys know what's going on in our fair scene this weekend. So to run down here real quick, let's let you know what's going on. So Friday, December the 15th, you can go see down at... Bully Studio, that is in New Westminster. You can see Pop Punk versus Hardcore, Christmas Rager featuring Koyoga, Cheer Up Champ, Seconds Flat, and Media Slaves. And of course, you could go down to Lanaloo's Rock and Roll Eater on Saturday, December the 16th. See Seconds Flat, Shadow Rat, Growlix, Credit Card Flawed, and Manic. There's the 14th annual Keithmas Food Bank Fundraiser happening at the Rickshaw Theater. Happens every year. If you're a big fan of, Keith, what's that guy's name from the Rolling Stones? Keith Richards. That's the one. You can go down there. They play a whole bunch of crazy cover songs. It raises money for a good cause. Check that out. And also going on at the Wise Hall, there is the Punkmas Sock Drive 2222 happening at the Wise Hall, put on by our good friends at Outhouse Productions, raising money to get socks for the homeless people in the downtown east side. You can come. You can bring cash donations. You can bring food. You can bring your old clothes. You can bring all kinds of crazy stuff. They wrap it off. All proceeds go to help the homeless in the downtown east side. That is what's going on in your scene this weekend. Now, back to the guest at hand. Nadav, Sasha, Santo.
Navi.
Ah, sweet Navi boy. We've been chatting for the past hour almost here about your film, Cavi, about the themes of the misunderstood or emasculated toxic male, the loner, the outcast, the outsider, and the different realms of the political spectrum that could drive someone to the extremes of society, let's say, and violence. What else do you want to cover about your film, about these themes? Is there anything that you feel we haven't discussed yet that you want the people out there to know about you, your filmmaking career, or the film that you are currently working on?
Great question. You know, like, we covered a lot of stuff. I mean, I think everyone sort of gets what the film's about. You know, it's a lot of, I think, shared anxiety that everyone's got, even us up in here in Canada. It's not something that's just isolated to the States. You know, it's something that we're seeing up here, we're seeing overseas. So it's very much a now global sort of concern issue and stuff like that. So I think it's really important. And, you know, like, part of what I love about being a filmmaker is sort of telling challenging stories. And some of my favorite films are films that, you know, haunt me for days. And so the fact that I was able to write something that, you know, haunted people for days that they just couldn't stop thinking about really sort of encouraged me and gave me the encouragement to sort of keep pushing the envelope and keep riding those lines to see how far I could push things to challenge the audience. And so I don't want to, like, you know, toot my own horn and say it's like a really important film. It's a parody of a film that happened almost 50 years ago. But I feel like, yeah, as you said, like, I think the timing is just right. You know, I feel like this moment, this story is right here, right now, and really reflects a lot of people's anxieties and fears and frustrations, I think, over how things are going. And it's a bit of a warning, in that regard. But, you know, like, truth, narrative, there's got to be some kind of solution, you know, to this whole mess, you know, and I'm not entirely sure what that is, but, you know, I feel like a lot of what corporations are doing to profiteer off of misinformation, to profiteer off of this divisiveness, to go like, well, it's just an algorithm. It's like, you're tweaking the algorithm specifically. You're now designing news for specific niche audiences, you know, and just because that is the trend of what makes money is probably the reason why we shouldn't have corporations in our news to begin with. But
strongly agree,
you know, but, like, it's just, you know, you can't trust it, you know, unfortunately, and so all of those things are sort of what is in this story, and so, you know, we're just looking to try to convince 1,000 people out there to chip in $25 each, and we'll hit our goal, and we'll be able to get this thing rolling and have something hopefully in festivals for this fall.
Fantastic. Well, Navi, I want to thank
Nadav.
I'm gonna do it.
I'm loving it.
Nadav. I want to thank you so much for coming in and having a conversation with me. I think it is an important topic that you are covering. I think they can be uncomfortable topics that people don't want to interact with, and I think that's what's engaging. Because, yeah. I mean, I had conversations with people that they were like, oh, you know, a film like Taxi Driver couldn't get made today because it would be too divisive. No one would know what to do with the protagonist. And the fact that you're handling that head on and directly making people look at it, hold the mirror up to themselves in our society, and really examine what would drive someone to go to those extremes. What is objective truth? What are the effects of this constant echo chamber, of this siloed lifestyle that we're constantly living by being only online, being digital, by being stuck in our own self-fed algorithm of objective truth? Those are important things.
Absolutely. That truth that, you know, whatever's trending, that becomes the narrative, even if it's completely made up, even if it's only half the truth, even if, like, oh, well, they have a correction down the line, that's not going to get boosted by the algorithm because it's not engaging enough.
That's true.
So as a society, we now start sowing in these lies into what we collectively believe is true.
I remember when I was having a conversation with my father one day, and I was explaining to him how that when I open up my Facebook and you open up your Facebook, what we see is completely different from each other.
Yeah.
Like, the news that is fed to us is different. The stories that trend to us are different. When we Google things, the results that we get are different. We can Google the same questions and get different answers.
Yeah.
And how that is, you know, changing the objective reality of what people see, because the world that I'm viewing through my little rectangular digital lens, like my world that I hold in my hand, is different than your world. So my truth is different than your truth.
Exactly.
And that can make a very, very confusing world to navigate when we're all trying to find what the narrative through line is of what objective reality is. And I think being able to tell stories and, most importantly, put down the phones and have conversations with people, like the conversation we're having right now, is where the path forward to a better world, or at least a more compassionate world where maybe we can get out of this alive lies.
You know what, I think if we all took a page out of my friend Alan's playbook, he doesn't Google anything but Kung Fu and hip-hop.
And so it's nothing but Wu-Tang.
And so that is all his world is.
Very good.
And you know what? I think he might be onto something.
It's a pretty good world. All right, at that. One more time, I've been chatting here with Nadav Sasha Santo. Go check out Cabby, C-A-B-B-I. Search it up on Indiegogo. Follow Nadav. Nadav, is there a place where people can find you on social media if they want to give you a follow?
Yeah, I think I'm on Instagram and Facebook and, a bunch of other stuff. I haven't touched that in a bit. I've been taking a bit of a break with the writing.
It's probably a better world for you. If you guys love what you hear, you can always find us here at CJSF 90.1 on your radio dial, on live streaming at cjsf.ca. Of course, from 9 to 10, every Thursday night, and of course on the new CGSF app. You can download it on either your Apple or Android device. You can also find us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/redradio. We'll be there until I can find a better place for us to be, because I gotta get off there. I've been your host, Johnny Bones. Thank you all for hanging out. We'll talk to y'all next week.
Thank you
for coming in, Dev.